You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast. My name is Baruch. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm your host, as always. Quick commercial, which I like to interject once in a while. If you like what you're hearing, please consider joining our mailing list at foriwillbewithyou.com. So this is the podcast for the 28th week of the year, from July 8th to July 14th, covering Leviticus 13:45 to Leviticus 14:35. So we're continuing this week with the discussion of the affliction that the Bible calls tsaras, which is sometimes translated in English as leprosy, but as we discussed last week, it's most likely not leprosy. There's a lot of reasons for this I'm not going to get into, but rather, tsaras is a skin condition that appears in people who have become spiritually impure, primarily through gossiping. It's a sort of physical punishment for the sin of gossiping and speaking slander about other people. So there is a lot of discussion in this section of Leviticus of what happens to a person who developed tsaras, what should be done with this person, and how he can be purified and cured of his condition. So in Leviticus 13:45, the Bible says he, meaning the metzora, the person with tsaras, he shall dwell in isolation outside the camp. So God puts the person suffering from tsaras into isolation. He's meant to spend time with himself away from others. So you could see this as a punishment. It's a rebuke for antisocial behavior. But another way to look at it, perhaps, is that God is attempting to make the sufferer of tsaras feel the pain of isolation. The pain that he or she has caused others by gossip and slander. This is a very basic aspect of gossip. When you gossip about someone else, perhaps making other people feel negatively about that person, you're causing that person to feel isolated and feel pain. So the metzora, the person with suffering from tsaras, should feel this pain of isolation that he has caused someone else. So God gives us tsaras and isolates us to make us reflect on being destructive like this. So the challenge for a person with tsaras, or for a recovering addict who is being rebuked for bad behavior, is to take the rebuke and use it as an opportunity to learn about ourselves. This is a big challenge, but a lot of good things can come from it. As addicts, we're usually self-serving and self-seeking. So we typically respond to rebuke with the denial and rationalization and more acting out, more like, you know, how dare you accuse me of that? I'm going to go have another drink because I'm so shocked that you would accuse me of something so selfish. But maybe this verse can help us think about being positive and constructive to deal with the isolation that's caused by our addictive behaviors. So if you imagine that you're either acting out an addiction or not doing good recovery, and your behavior causes you to be isolated from other people, you can handle that isolation in different ways. You can act out and be angry about it, or you can try and deal with it and see what you can learn about yourself and see if you can use an opportunity maybe to change your behavior instead of just continuing what you are doing. So this verse, Leviticus 14:1, which comes next, says, God spoke to Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the metzora. On the day of his purification, he shall be brought to the priest. So you don't go to see a doctor when you have tsaras. You see the priest because it is a spiritual disease, and therefore it has a spiritual cure, spiritual treatment. The person with tsaras re-enters the camp. The camp meaning, what they're saying here is you have to imagine the Israelites are camped in the wilderness. A very large group of people, but sort of in a group in the middle of the wilderness. So that's the camp. So if you go outside the camp, you're going out basically into the middle of nowhere. So now the Metzora is coming back. This might sound familiar to us as addicts. After a relapse or a binge, we finally end our isolation and re-enter the world. Yet we're still contaminated. In our case, we might be high or even hungover or just in a really, really rotten mood. But we're back. Even with a small amount of sober time, we can re-enter the world. But we have to be careful because we're in a fragile state. It helps to acknowledge that the privilege of being back among people is a sign of God's love for us. You know, like the person recovering from tsaras, we're permitted by God to re-enter the camp, so to speak. God forgives us and gives us a second, third, fourth chance. You know, it brings to mind a comment that I heard in a meeting once that's just really shocking but true. Guy said, "If life were fair, I'd be dead." And this is so true for so many of us. If life were fair, we'd be dead. But God gives us chances to come back. So the challenge is to figure out how to make the most of this incredible opportunity we have with coming back. But the moment of our re-entry in our shattered condition, this is a great time to meditate on the endless compassion that God has for recovering addicts. We need to do the work to be worthy of this love. Now the Metzora is brought to the priest. Leviticus 14:4 says, "The priest shall command, and for the person being purified there shall be taken two live, clean birds, cedar wood, crimson thread, and hyssop." Okay, so this is a little bit complicated and detailed, but what the Bible is describing is the purification ritual of the tsaras sufferer. So the ritual involves the sacrifice of two birds, two animals on the altar, as well as wood, which is burned on the altar, crimson thread, red thread, and a shrub, a plant called hyssop. They all have to be used in this ritual. Now, I know this probably sounds a little weird, you know, really you have to bring like a bird and a thread and a special kind of wood and some kind of shrub. You know, it sounds strange from the modern perspective, but like everything else in the Bible, it's described in detail for a reason, and that reason is ours to figure out. And of course, we never know the real true reason. We can only guess. But in this case, the interpretations are that have been brought down from the sages are helpful to understand what's really going on. So we'll start with this cedar wood. Commentators say that the cedar is a tall tree, like the person with tsaras who made himself seem tall by denigrating others. The cedar tree represents the heights of ego that we can ascend as we act out and disparage our fellows, right? This is how people who gossip behave. This is also classic alcoholic behavior. I'm going to make myself big and tall by making everybody else seem small. I'm going to say mean things about other people. Although it brings to mind a great joke that I heard. It was told as a joke, but it's really true. In a meeting, a person says, "What's an alcoholic?" An alcoholic is someone who is lying on the sidewalk looking down at everybody. That's really the truth. We think we're making ourselves tall, like the cedar tree, by cutting everybody else down, but we're really just cutting ourselves down. But in in this biblical verse, the person with tsaras needs to cleanse himself of the spiritual condition that was caused by haughtiness, caused by making himself big at the expense of others. So he brings this wood for the tall tree as part of the redemption ritual. And I think for ourselves in recovery, we need to think about the heights of the cedar tree as we ourselves have, you know, gotten high on our own supply, so to speak, and let our ego drive us to mistreat others. Continuing with this verse, Leviticus 14:4, about bringing two live birds, clean birds, cedar wood, crimson thread, and hyssop. Why does the Bible want the Metzora to bring birds as part of the sacrifice to atone for tsaras? So one way to look at it is the symbolism is that, like a chattering bird, the person with tsaras has been guilty of gossip, you know, like flapping around and telling tales, flying around, tweeting little things in people's ears. This is what a bird does, this is what a person with gossip does. You know that feeling when you've got something juicy to say about someone else and you can't wait to run around and tell everybody? You're acting like a little birdie flying around telling tales. So the bird sacrifice is intended to make this right in spiritual terms. You bring a sacrifice. Again, bringing this idea of sacrifice, you really are the one who should be going up in smoke on the altar for this sin. But you bring the bird as a symbol that you're going to make it right and do better yourself. And you know, recovery, if you really look at recovery carefully, it has a lot to do with watching what we say, you know, what we say to others, what we say to ourselves, what we say about other people. You know, it's in the traditions and in the statements of the meetings. They say, let us not gossip. You know, I mean, it's there. It's right in the text of AA for a very important reason. It's very well, you know, AA would not work if meetings and fellowship was all about just running down other people and saying nasty things about other people. And I think that the meetings work because people make a conscious effort to avoid this kind of talk. And I think it's a great testament to how good the program is, and also it's a testament to how difficult this can be for people. So, you know, the way this is brought out in this verse is that this use of crimson thread, this may not really make any apparent sense, but what you have to understand from the commentary is that this thread was dyed with a pigment that was made from insects. And this insect dye is to remind us, if we're Metzora, if we have tsaras, we've been gossiping, that we're like insects, basically. We cease being human beings. We're just like animals. Similarly, this hyssop, which is a plant that grows right on the ground, is meant to remind us that we've become like a ground level, or we're like dirt. We're in the dirt. We've denigrated ourselves, and that we should. Or conversely, we should bring ourselves down. This is another way to look at it. Either we're acting like we're on the ground, like we're acting like dirt, or another way is that we should be on the ground. We shouldn't be high up and haughty. That we need to get ourselves down to the ground, down to earth, so to speak, and get in touch with reality and be spiritually pure and humble, be lowly. So it's both. It could be either or, whichever one makes more sense to you in recovery, that when you're acting out, and certainly when we're acting out in addiction, a lot of the time we're running our mouths a lot, and certainly, you know, one of the great pains of recovery is when people think about what they've said when they were drunk, or maybe they don't even remember, you know, that someone else has to tell them what they were saying when they were drunk or in a blackout or whatever. And, you know, this is a reminder to be humble, to bring yourself back to earth, keep a low profile, avoid judging others, you know, avoid making critical comments that make you feel good momentarily, which are bad for your soul. Leviticus 14:9 reads, "On the seventh day he shall shave off all his hair, his head, his beard, his eyebrows, and all his hair he shall shave off." So the he here is again the metzora, the person with tzaras, who is being purified in this ritual. So he's brought this sacrifice of birds and these shrubs and other things, wood, and now he's supposed to shave his hair. So again, we have these extra details and apparent redundancy. Why does it say he should shave off all his hair, right? Period. That's all you need to know, because most of us, if we hear that instruction, we'll shave off all our hair. But in this case, the Torah is being very specific. Head, beard, eyebrows. So one interpretation is the reason why we repeat this is that each of these actions has a specific meaning that we should understand. So one of the great commentators says that we should think about shaving the hair around the mouth as a way to warn the slanderer who got tzaras by evil speech to watch what he says in the future. Or shaving the head is a way to avoid haughtiness, which starts in the head. You know, it makes a lot of sense. And it actually, if you think about how this might work, if let's say you're in recovery, imagine this was happening in recovery. You'd say you act out and you act haughty, you have a big head and you're running your mouth, and your sponsor says, okay, you need to shave your head to make sure you never get a big head again, and shave your beard so you remember to watch what comes out of your mouth. I have a funny feeling that we would actually do well with that. Be like, oh, I shaved my beard around my mouth to remind me not to run my mouth so much, you know. Keep my mouth shut. Keep my head humble. And similarly, I think this verse describes what happens on the seventh day. The recovery ritual for the Matzora took, I think, 8 days. So here's the seventh day. So it might be a good piece of advice, like in the first couple days of recovery or first couple days after a relapse, be quiet, don't really say anything, you know. Keep yourself quiet. Do more listening than talking. Might be good for us. Continuing with this verse, let's talk about the eyebrows. Again, one of these sort of weird details that doesn't make a lot of sense on its own, but if you look at it in context, can be helpful. One of the great commentators said that the eyes are extremely important in understanding tzaras and gossip and slander, because even though gossip is something that comes out of our mouths, it starts with the eyes, usually. It starts with envy and jealousy, coveting. The eyes covet, you know? And this feels right for recovery. There's so much of this in the rooms, and I know from my own personal experience. You see something, you react to it, then you want to talk about it. And sometimes that sequence of events is very unhealthy. And if we can interrupt it, we'll be a lot better off. So this idea of shaving off the eyebrows, which, honestly, if you've ever seen someone who's shaved off their eyebrows, it looks a little odd. A face looks different. It's a way of reducing the beauty of the face and sort of reminding yourself that, you know, you should guard your eyes, because the eyes can lead to these passionate feelings of envy and resentment. You know, it goes like this. You're looking and you see your neighbor with a new car and you think, wow, I love the look of that car. I'm looking at it with my eyes. I want a car like that. Why can't I have a car like that? Why does he have a car like that and I don't? And the next thing you know, you're saying to somebody, you know, that guy's got a new car, but he's a such and such, and he doesn't really deserve it, and how he thinks he's so special, and blah, blah, blah. And the next thing you know, you've gotten into negativity and gossip. And you know who suffers? You suffer from that. The guy you're talking about, if he hears about it, he'll be offended and hurt. But you're really mostly hurting yourself. Because, for one thing, talking about it certainly isn't going to get you any new cars. It's just going to make you feel worse about the situation, ultimately. And it won't help your recovery either. You know, and one thing which we can try and remember is we shouldn't judge people's insides from their outside. You never know what's going on with somebody else, and it's not your business. And the truth is, if you see someone with a fancy car, all you can know about them is that somebody bought a fancy car. Maybe it wasn't even them. Maybe they got was bought for them as a gift. Or maybe they just borrowed money that they couldn't afford to pay back to get that fancy car. You don't know what's really going on. And I will tell you an interesting thing that I learned in Los Angeles, where the big car culture, there's a lot of people who actually resent their own cars. It's a funny thing, but people have to work very hard at jobs they don't like to pay for cars they don't really want. It's a peculiar condition. So you never know what's going on. And sometimes it's better to avoid letting your eyes get you started on talking about things that you're going to regret saying. Leviticus 14:33-35 says, God spoke to Moses, saying, when you arrive in the land of Canaan that I give you as a possession, and I will place at Saras affliction upon a house in the land of your possession, the one to whom the house belongs shall come and declare to the priest, something like an affliction has appeared to me in the house. So this is an interesting little extension of the Saras concept, which is that your house can also get Saras, meaning that the walls of your house start to develop blotches and stains and weird flaking off of paint and stuff. and just as your skin will get Saras. And so the question is, what's going to get... Why would a house get Saras? Is the house gossiping about someone? No, not really. The interpretation is that if we spend our time denigrating others, contaminating ourselves spiritually with gossip, we poison our home as well. And in this way, the Bible's actually trying to make something physical to represent a really important concept, emotional and spiritual concept, which is that when we gossip and slander others, we really create a toxic environment around ourselves. And if there's other people around, like children or spouses, they can be affected by it as well. And I think we've all been through this, and we've also probably all done this, which is when you're around someone who's constantly talking negatively about other people, or occasionally says really nasty things about other people, it's bad to be around that kind of person in spiritual terms. You know, go to an Al-Anon meeting and check out what people have to say about that. And so what God is doing almost is compassionately saying, but demonstrating, so, you know, I'm going to make your house start to fall apart as a result of this toxic environment you're creating. It's a reminder, you're ruining your home with this behavior. And, you know, if only our walls would do this to us. Today, our modern buildings and walls are impervious to our spiritual impurity. It's almost would almost be a relief if our house would start to fall apart when we started gossiping. It would remind us, oh, I better keep my mouth shut. Certainly would be a sign that things would need to change in your life.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast, daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com